Thank you, Robin. That was inspiring, beautiful, delightful. Good morning. I'm Ralph Tiksinski, and I'm going to be the introducer and welcomer this morning. But we are first delighted to say that Prairie is an open-minded and open-hearted congregation. We aspire to be both inclusive in our welcoming. We welcome you no matter what your age, your abilities or inabilities. And toward the end of the service, we would invite visitors, guests, and returning friends to introduce yourselves so that we might learn who you are and where you've been and get to know you a little better. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. They are presented either by a Prairie member, and today we have two Prairie members who are going to be presenting, Reuben and Madeline Arnold-Long are going to be our speakers, and we are just delighted that they are here and going to share their journey passage to India. Our opening words, in fact, will be presented by Reuben. Madeline, I'm sorry, Madeline.
We arrive together here, travelers on life's journey, seekers of meaning, of love, of healing, of justice, of truth. Numerous are our origins, our paths, and our destinations. And yet, happily, our ways have joined together here today. And though this joining may be for just a moment in time, the moment is all we can ever be certain of. May we embrace this and every instant of our lives.
Okay. So I guess now we'll have hymn number 134, Our World is One World.
Light of life, be kindled again in our hearts as we meet together this morning to celebrate the joy of human community, seeking a wholeness that extends beyond ourselves. we'd like now to have a moment of silent meditation. So it's going to take us a sec to get everything set up here. Hi, for those of you who don't know us, I'm Reuben Arnold. This is Madeline Arnold, predictably. We're going to be presenting today about our three-week, month-long journey to Andhra Pradesh in India. So we're just going to set our slideshow up here. Yeah, that's probably fine. Yeah, I think we'll leave this on. I guess this has to get turned on. We thought it was on, but it turned off while we weren't paying attention. Okay, so for those of you who maybe don't know, we originally decided to go to India because of a prairie connection. We have John Eleganti here. He and Rebecca introduced us to, this was our opening shot here. They introduced us to the father who is at this school in India, and we got to know him, and then we decided to go. But we'll talk about that later. Okay, so this is the beginning of our trip.
On our way to O'Hare. So this is the plane that we were on. It was 9 seats per row, this huge international flight. Total travel time to get there was 25 hours, including layovers.
And the time changes 10 and a half hours. Somehow we managed. So this is a map of India. You can see that the area outlined in red is the state of Andhra Pradesh, which is where we were going. The capital is Hyderabad, and the language that they speak is Telugu. In India, the states are divided along lingual lines. So in Andhra, the language Telugu is mostly spoken along with Urdu, but mostly Telugu.
You can see Hyderabad with the star where we... That's where we flew into, and then we had to take a train about 9 hours to get closer to the coast where our village was.
Mm-hmm. Here in the what's called the East Godavari district, over here, that's where we were teaching and spending most of our time. So, yeah. This is an example of Telugu script. This is from a newspaper, and this is another example of Telugu. Just from a store that was in the area. So we'll see what that looks like.
So the first place we went when we came to Hyderabad was this hostel. We got to the airport about 2 in the morning and then drove and got here around 5. They were nice enough to let us sleep until about 1 or 2 in the afternoon that day, get our jet lag settled in. And then they took us around, or one of the boys at the hostel took us around Hyderabad to see some of the sights before we left the next day. This is a train. We took the night train to Ravalopalem, which is about our village of about 30,000 where we stayed.
Mm-hmm. So this is this is what the train looked like in the morning after everyone had been sleeping. Okay. Oh, we have a movie here. So, after we got dropped off at the train station in Rajamundry, we had to drive about an hour to get to our village. So this is a video from our drive.
It was rainy that day. We went during the rainy season.
So. You can see all the people with bananas here along the side. So this was just sort of our first introduction to the countryside. You can see these little three-wheel cars that we'll talk about later. These little yellow things.
Okay. So even though we went during the rainy season, it really didn't rain that much We only had maybe two or three really rainy days like this.
Mm-hmm. So when we first got to the school, we took a little video of our room. We didn't actually take any pictures of our room somehow. So, this is where we were staying for most of the time at the Catholic school.
The bathroom.
Shower was actually fairly functional, which was surprising. So, anyway, okay.
So that's a picture of the school, and then you can see a little side of the church on the left there. That's where we were teaching, right there. And yeah, that's the church from the front.
So this was a Catholic school, but like many Catholic schools here, not all of the students were Catholic. The boarding students were Catholic, but the non-boarding students mostly weren't, and we'll get into that a little bit later.
So we taught at the school for about a week. This is just me with some of the kids. And then we went off with John's brother, Swami, to a village called Yarnagudem, I don't know how many miles away. So we took a bike there, all three of us on the bike.
So yeah, Madeline and I and John's brother Swami were all on this bike. And we fit better than you might expect, but that's pretty common in India. You see lots of people, sometimes you might see four people on a bike this size. So
that's Swami right there.
So this is Swami next to Madeline, and this is Madeline attempting to eat sugar cane. And those are Swami's two kids. Very cute. Okay. And we saw a solar eclipse while we were there. So you can see the sun there and the moon on the bottom left.
Yep.
So
that was
pretty amazing.
Oh, okay. So after staying at the school another week after coming back from Swami's house, then we went back to Hyderabad before our flight and stayed there about a day and a half and saw more sights there. This is called Charminar. You can see there's a few different gates on this one road. It's just one of the biggest tourist attractions there. And we also went to this fort called Golconda, which you can see there. I think it was like hundreds of steps to get up to the top.
Yeah. Very tall. Okay. So, and that's the end of our brief overview, so we'll go a little more into the meat of things. This is what the flight attendants wear on Air India. So, interesting sidelight, I guess. So we wanted to talk a little bit about the people that we met there. So on the right here is Father Palithanam, who we knew as Father Pali.
Some of you might have seen him. He came to Prairie to speak a few months ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was speaking here in Madison. And on his left is Brother Peter. And there were two brothers at the school who had absolutely horrendous schedules. And were spending all of their time with the boys and didn't really have any time. But they were both great guys. And this is Brother Balaswami, who we called Brother Bala. And everyone else did, too.
And then these are pictures of the sisters. There's five, but these are three of them. The Mother Superior on the left there. And they stayed in a separate building at the convent from the boys.
Mm-hmm. The boys who stayed at the school and the girls who stayed at the school definitely we're always in separate buildings because it's a Catholic thing. So,
so this is a picture we thought illustrated how guests are treated there. So whenever we went, they'd always give us chairs to sit on when everyone else is sitting on the ground. That's just what always happened.
And we always felt really guilty about it. And they would never let us clean anything or help with any work because we were guests.
They'd always make sure we had enough food and always asking us whatever we needed and stuff. I mean, at first I had the impression I felt strange about sitting on this chair and stuff because I thought it had to do with race, but then I realized later it's just the guest status. So.
Okay, so now we wanted to talk about the timetable for the boys at the boarding school there. So this was the bell. So this is one of the boys ringing the bell, and every sort of shift from activities would be marked by this bell. And this is, you can see on the left side of the screen here, there's this door that you can see very faintly. That's actually the door to our room. Okay.
So 5:30 every morning, they'd get up and do some stuff before going to Mass at 6:30. So this is inside the church. That's one of the chairs that we'd be sitting on behind them. And so you can see they're all in uniform. They are already ready for school that day. Mm-hmm. Then they do morning jobs, sweeping, you know, doing whatever outside. And then they eat breakfast and then go to assembly, which is here in front of the school. Everyone lines up by their classes, and they talk about just rules or news for that day and say the pledge. And then go to school, which is the classroom. And then after school, they have activities. This is just the boys warming up, doing some stretches, and then they can play either basketball or soccer. Yeah, soccer. And even though cricket is a really popular sport in India, they don't usually play that because you can't involve as many kids in that. And they have so many kids that they play more team sports. And the girls are always in a separate area. This is just, some of the little kids wouldn't always play the games. They just hang out. So this is some of the girls playing, like, this is called killing ball, which sounds really intimidating, but it's more like, it's just kind of a dodgeball type game.
The girls really only had one game that they played, and it was killing ball.
They'd always drag us over to play with them. Then they'd have bath after that. So bath, they'd usually bathe in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And then we'd always have tea, which is some of, one of the favorite things that Ruben and I liked about India. Yeah.
We missed the tea probably more than anything else.
Every day at 4:00, usually. This is a picture of their study hall room, where all the boarding school kids would be in one room to study. They'd spend hours there in the afternoon with a few breaks, but much, much studying going on all the time.
Yeah, they're much more diligent than we are, although maybe that's probably because they were forced to be diligent. But okay, so we wanted to talk a little bit about the differences in between the Indian schooling system and what it is here. So one big difference is that in India, most kids go to what's called a medium school, and that's usually from first grade to 10th grade, and those are the same as what grades we have here, but it ends at the 10th grade, or what they call the 10th class. And after that year, they go to a two-year junior college, or what they call an inter, or a plus two. There's lots of names for it. So, and by that time, they already have to have decided what they want to do. So they'll be going to a specific junior college, like for nursing or for engineering or biology or something that they've already decided by their sophomore year. So a lot of times we have to decide maybe 3 or 4 years later than they do what they want to do.
So they'd always be asking us, what's your ambition and what are you going to do? And we'd always be like, I don't know. And they're like, how can you not know? Like, it was strange for them, but they all know right away, even talking to like fourth graders and stuff, they know what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. And one other interesting aspect was that all of their textbooks are standardized across the entire state. So these were some textbooks. This is the Trojan War, which is for class 6, a reader in English. And that's published by the Andhra Pradesh government, and every child in the 6th class in the entire state uses this book.
Yeah.
So
these are, we'd always be having supplementary readers where we'd read stories to them and stuff. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the classrooms. That's usually about 40 kids in a class, so for one teacher. Sometimes Ruben and I would take classes together, but often just separately. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of kids.
At the private schools, there's usually around 40 kids. At the government schools, there's usually around 60 or 70 kids in a classroom. So the private schools are usually considered far superior, at least most of them. So parents, if they have enough money, take their kids and send them to private school. Okay.
We were going to talk about some of the relationships we had with the kids. So there's a story behind this chat. So when I first got there on Sunday, there were some kids from the village playing cricket, and I was just kind of standing there. And then I look over, and suddenly this ball comes flying at me and hits me in the neck, and I can't breathe. I mean, this is like full force cricket shot here. And so I'm standing there, and everyone runs over and is freaking out because they think they hit this, you know, foreigner, and they're like, oh, my gosh, are you okay? But we made a joke out of it, so I was always trying to hit him with a cricket ball.
So yeah, we wanted to illuminate sort of how we tried to be friends with the kids, which obviously we were, but at the same time, this is metal and sunglasses. At the same time, we had to try to teach them and keep discipline in a classroom, which was hard for us to do often because we couldn't hit the kids.
Like everyone there does hit the kids.
Right.
But like we didn't feel comfortable doing
right.
it.
Right. And sometimes a student in a class would stand up and be like, "You have to hit him. He was misbehaving." And they would like give us a stick. And we're like, "No." So yeah, it was.
So they're used to that discipline. They're used to having that. So that's how a lot of the teachers keep control. And it's not like they go on whack them really hard or anything. But
also, and they could talk in Telugu behind our backs, and we'd have no idea what they were saying. But we still had a really good time with a lot of the kids. Sometimes they would want you to stop teaching and just like sing a song or like take a picture. This is one of the times we succumbed to that. But this is Brother Bala, so obviously some of the other teachers had a good time with the kids as well.
Oh, and we also want to talk about how it's different, how people touch each other. I just wanted you to see a few of these shots and get an impression. So especially in this shot is so different because a lot of the guys will just, you know, hang their arms over each other and even walk down the street holding hands, and it's not considered strange or anything like that. And but of course there's never anything between the sexes. The girls will touch each other and the guys will, but nothing between them. But it was very striking for us to be there.
Okay, what were we talking about here? Okay, so I wanted to get into a little bit how this school functions. So there's only a quarter of the kids who go to the school. The boys that we've been showing you are the boarding children, and these are all there on scholarship, so they don't have to pay, and they're all from poor Catholic families.
They're funded by international donations and
mm-hmm.
stuff.
And then there's about three quarters of the kids are not boarders. They're from the town, from Ravalapalem, and they're mostly upper middle class, mostly Hindu, because their parents want to send them to a good private school because they certainly don't want them to go to the government school. And so a lot of these, some of the money from these kids pays for the poorer Catholic kids to come to this school on scholarship. So it's sort of an interesting relationship, but the kids seem to get along fairly well between themselves, better than we would have expected. Okay, we wanted to talk a little bit about sort of the divisions. Like, there are a lot of poorer people in India, so this is from a poor village that one of the students from the school was from. This girl in the sort of blue-white dress in the middle, she had been going to the school but was back in the village for a visit. But the other kids hadn't been going to the school. But then this was another girl who is from more of an upper-class family. Her mom is a university professor, and you can see she has a Hannah Montana bag there. But
it was strange while talking to her because she had this very good English and very sophisticated, and then we found out she was in eighth grade, and we were just surprised. We thought she was a lot older. So
this was the village where we were, or the village, 30,000-40,000 people. There's on the right side of the shot, you can't really see it, but on the right side of this wall of fruit, there's a big highway that's one of the major highways in India. So that's one of the main reasons for this town's growth. But this is sort of one of the typical shots from this village. And you have some sort of upper class houses here. So this is one example and another one. But at the same time, like nearby, you might be having people like this living in a poorer village, like a lot of people living in a small space. So this is one family that we met when we were out.
And right away they gave us balloons, like everyone always gives us stuff. So there's one shot.
Okay.
So, I'll talk about this. So this is, we haven't talked yet about PARA, which is People's Action for Rural Awakening, which is a social action organization that's affiliated with this school we were at. Father Palithanam, who is working at the school, also heads up this initiative. So they work a lot with land rights for the Dalits, the untouchable castes, and with atrocity monitoring and women's rights and stuff like this. So this is a poster there from Denounce Domestic Violence Against Women, which is something that's not talked about much in India. This is a meeting I attended between some members of some women's cooperatives in the area and also various committees that were working at PARA. So this is sort of a board meeting, and they were talking a lot about different land rights issues that were pending in the courts that they were fighting. A lot of times, the government has certain initiatives, like the federal government has certain initiatives to try to give land to the poor people, but often the rich landowners in the area manage to take hold of the land, and then sort of with some well-placed bribes, manage to sort of try to take the rights away. And so often these poor people are off just disenfranchised and all of their rights are taken away. And so these people try to fight in the courts to get a lot of those back. But it's very difficult and it takes a long time. This was at the center. They have a hostel for these kids. It's smaller, but these are kids who ran away from home or were child laborers. And they're trying to rehabilitate them so they can go back to school. So this is sort of a midway point.
Transition school kind of
thing. For these kids. Okay, and this is one of the women who was working at the center. She was working at the gender desk, so with women's rights and empowerment. And this is a women's cooperative in the area, and they were three of them. These groups gave microloans mostly to women in the area to start businesses and agricultural loans and stuff like this, and tried to organize to form various businesses making goods and stuff to have some earning power. So these were some really good work that these groups were doing.
Oh, this is one of the businesses that we got to see. They're making mango sweets there on the top and the bottom. And in the middle shelf, there's this rice paper sweet that we got to try, actually. And then I'm going to explain how they make that. There's this picture on the bottom right. Those are pots that are upside down and round on the top. And then they place a fire underneath them. So get these pots very hot. And then there's a cloth there that they dip in a rice powder paste, and then they place the cloth over the pot, and then it forms a film, and then when it cools they can take it off, and it's this is a pile of the rice paper that they've made, so they can roll that up into sweets. And it sounds like a lot of labor, and it is a lot of labor, but if you think about the cost of rice and water, it's not that much. So they can do a lot of labor, but they can make goods fairly cheap. So,
okay.
This is just a rice field that we visited.
Mm-hmm. So one of the types of examples that they might give a loan to someone working on a field like this. What was this one?
Oh, this is, I'm talking about gender separation. So this is a picture where you can see all the guys are on one side and all the girls are on another. And they would have, you know, multiple people on one of these desks, but of course they would never mix up the genders with that. Mm-hmm. And
so there was an election while we were there, because this was near the beginning of the school year in India. So an election for the 10th class to have sort of a school officer, like a leader. So there was a position for the SPL and the ASPL. So there was like a senior and an assistant senior. And the senior position was open to both boys and girls, but the assistant was only open to girls. And I thought, well, that's sort of odd. But then I realized that only the boys ran for the one position, and none of the girls did, and the girls only ran for the assistant. So they had to keep that open for the girls, because otherwise usually a boy would get both of them. We noticed that just sort of the development of boys and girls in India is different, because once they get sort of past puberty, a lot of times the girls are much sort of more reserved and maybe even timid than what we would expect here in the classroom. Like when they're called upon, a lot of times they don't really want to answer.
Well, this is a picture of one of the guys making a speech, and they're very forward and strong and They're very confident looking, and then when the girls are speaking, they're much more quiet, and we noticed that all three of their speeches were pretty much the same content. They said basically the exact same thing, and so they didn't really have like the confidence to switch things up or anything. So they had a format and they followed it, and so we noticed that in the younger grades, like up to maybe sixth grade, the girls were just as outgoing, but after that they became a lot more timid, so it was just something we noticed. I'm going to talk a little about clothes. So you can see here, most of the time the kids had to wear uniforms, but they also had school on Saturday every other week. So this is a picture on Saturday where they, you can see, have very colorful decorated clothes. And here's a close shot. The girls would always have their hair in two braids looped up and then with bows. And there's a picture with their uniforms, but the women would always wear, these are teachers, bright, colorful saris all the time. And here you can see how the women's clothes is very elaborate, whereas the men just can wear pants and a t-shirt. So
usually a collared shirt.
Collared shirt, but a lot of times. But it just seems strange for us to see the difference between that. But I always thought the guys looked very stylish. They always had their collar shirts and trendy pants and stuff. So you can see that here. Always very bright and colorful. I liked that. And in the more rural areas, a lot of people men would wear dhotis, which is shown here, where it's more like a skirt, and it's just flowing fabric. I guess it's more comfortable. A lot of times they'd wear it in the house and stuff, more casual clothing in the rural areas. And this is just some cute kid that had his own style, I guess. So this is my quest for saris. So this is, I went shopping with one of the sisters and one of the girls from the school. And this is the shop on the top floor where I bought my saris. I bought three of them, actually. And then we had to go get them embroidered. Which, I mean, when I say I bought three saris, it sounds like, whoa, but they're like $10. Yeah. So, and then this is getting the top embroidered at a separate shop. And this is me with one of the girls. So of course you have to accessorize too. So this is a shop of bangles. And they would always say, you know, you can't just wear a sari without bangles. Like, it just doesn't work. You have to have them. You have to have a necklace. You have to have earrings. They're always so surprised that I wouldn't wear them because I don't have my ears pierced. And they're just like, wear your earrings. But, and then this is getting henna done. This woman did this professionally, so she'd do it for weddings and stuff. And Ruben got some done too, but it's faded by now.
Everything that's on that you can see here, that she probably did in about 10 or 15 minutes.
Just.
She was really, really fast.
And they'd always want to put flowers in your hair too. And then this is a significant picture because it's the first time I could put my hair down because we went back to Hyderabad, which is the big city, so there it's more acceptable to have your hair down. But the whole time I was in Ravalapalem, always have your hair in a braid. That's just the custom.
So. Okay, so I wanted to talk a little bit about transportation here in India. So almost nobody in India owns a car. It's very rare. And many people don't own vehicles at all, so instead they use these auto rickshaws, these three-wheeler cars, as taxis. And so all of these are taxis, and so theoretically there's supposed to be three people in the back and a driver in front, but a lot of times they manage to pack like 8-10 people in one of these. Right now it looks like there's only about 5 or 6, so that's pretty light load. But so here you can see, this is the back of one of them, there's some guys hanging out the back. So they pack a lot of people in because it's expensive. So, and then the people who have a vehicle usually have a bike. So this is, it's more of a middle class thing to have a bike. And there's three guys on this bike, which is pretty normal to see. Sometimes, like I said, you'll see four, although that's fairly unusual. Mostly if you see four, it'll be like a family with young kids.
But you rarely will see one person. Usually yeah. It's at least two.
This is the highway, but you can't really see the highway. because there are thousands of goats. Sometimes you'll just be driving along and there'll be a massive herd of goats or cows and you just sort of have to wait for them to get off the road.
You honk your horn, but you know, you just...
Right, wait. People just honk a lot because honking is incessant in India. Because you honk to say, hey, I'm here, hey, I'm coming. It's not like a disaster, it's just the normal course of events. And also, train transportation is extremely common, especially for long distances, because people don't have cars, so trains are the best way to get around. So, culminating this, we have a video of sort of some typical transportation...
Traffic
in India.
Oh, and
here.
You can see that it's all men that are out. There's no women driving around.
So what you can't hear is the honking, but... There's honking all the time.
And there's no really clear lanes of any sort.
Yeah, lanes don't exist. Really. There are more...
Oh, yeah,
there are bicycles, but... I would say probably motorbikes are more common than bikes, although.
Yep,
left side.
And wheel on the right.
Okay. We also wanted to talk about religion a little bit. This is a church that we saw at Nirmalagini, which was a really beautiful church, actually. And this was a Hindu temple that we visited, which is one of the biggest ones in the area, actually in the whole state. And then... This is a mosque in Hyderabad. So we picked out some of the coolest religious buildings we saw. But these are the three main religions that are in that part of India. In the rural areas, there's really only Christianity and Hinduism, although in the cities there's some more Islam. Especially as far as the castes go, the lower castes, mostly the Dalits, have largely converted to Christianity because... they're sort of, in Hinduism, they're institutionalized into this system of sort of oppression. So a lot of them have converted to Christianity, but and some from the upper castes have, but in the middle castes, conversion is extremely looked down upon, and there's a lot of friction due to religion in the area. This is one site that might be sort of odd for Westerners to see. It's a woman in a burqa on a motorcycle. But that's not that odd there. We saw that a lot of times in Hyderabad. So a lot of the women who are Islamic wear this black burqa, and it's always black, but it's not that strange. Like, they just walk around and shop, and it seems like they're not that restricted, really, because of it or anything. It's just what they wear. But one thing that's in common among all the religions there is that you always take your shoes off before you go into the church, temple, whatever.
We always thought that was just like a Hindu thing because of, you know, leather and shoes and sandals and stuff, but they have it in every church, every building. So.
Okay, so we wanted to talk about marriage some. In India, almost all the marriages are arranged. That's what you do. It's arranged marriage. So this is John's brother Swami and his wife Kumari. They had an arranged marriage. And that's his sister, and she had an arranged marriage, and it's just normal. That's what everybody does there, and it's very weird for them to think of how we do it here, just how it's odd for us to consider how they do it there. And marriage between castes or religions is not acceptable, basically, to anyone. It's anytime something like that might be happening, it's extremely I don't know, people really don't like it, and often people are shunned because of this kind of...
That's John's grandma, Swami's grandma.
Mm-hmm. So Swami's John's grandmother and his mother, and they both live in the same house with his brother and his kids, so there's four generations in the same house. Okay, and that's one of his sisters, John's sisters, and her kids, and another one of his sisters and her baby, and they both live nearby, so there's a lot of family in there.
We were only there for 3 days, but we saw many of his family members come over to the house, so it's not strange to have a lot of extended family.
And they all fed us.
Extended family.
A lot. Fed us.
One day we got up and we had breakfast, and then we went over to his sister's house and she fed us more, and then we came back and they made us have lunch. It was awful.
Okay, but tasty. Let's see here. So we wanted to talk a little bit about how race is perceived in India. So in the southern areas, where did my stick go? Okay. So in the southern, South India, which is down here, sort of, in Andhra and Kerala and these states, people are often darker skinned than what you have in the, sort of the north part of India. And there's some sort of mutual animosity a little bit between the groups. But at the same time, in advertisements, everyone is always extremely light skinned. And there's this incredible aspiration for fair skin. Even in the southern parts of India where everyone is very dark-skinned, people use creams, powders, all of these things to try to get fair skin. Everyone in all the advertisements and all the movies always has light skin. So you can see it almost seems like Madeline's skin is closer to Brother Bala's than his is to one of the boys here. But even he thought his skin was too dark. So everybody always
wants... Well, he was thinking, I'm so dark. So.
And we think their skin looks really nice. They like it better than our pastiness, but they don't.
Yeah, that's just when we went in this boat and just seeing how it's funny because whenever they get dirty, it's not as obvious. So they're like, you have mud all over you. And I'm like, so do you. You just can't see it.
So because of our whiteness, we got into 3 different newspapers. After we left Hyderabad, we didn't see another white person for 20 days. So it's definitely not a touristy area. So when we were going to places, people would stop us, and then we would get in the newspaper just for being white.
And sometimes people would just say, oh, can we take a picture with you?
Yeah, this happened at least 10 times. We would get stopped by someone, and they're like, can we take a picture with you? Because it's just unusual. Okay. So, and we also got to visit the regional government. They're in the East Godavari district, and this is the office of the collector, who sort of running the government there. And we had to go there actually because of a really trivial issue about some land that they had purchased that here would have been just resolved with a call or an email. But there we had to drive 2 hours and wait for a while, and maybe we never would have seen him at all just to resolve this little issue that shouldn't have been very important. So it just sort of shows some of the inefficiencies that they have there. Oh, okay, and here's a story. This is Naga, who took us around Hyderabad near the end of our trip. And we asked him how old you had to be to get a driver's license, and he said, well, 18, but I have one, and I'm 17. And he said, well, how did that happen? And he's like, oh, I just gave him a little bit of money, and it was fine, you know? Like, that's sort of something normal in the course of events, like a bribe.
Whatever.
if you needed to get it done, then that's what you do. Okay, and we wanted to finish up by saying that all of the boys are really good dancers, and
I felt really
jealous and intimidated. So here's this nice little video of some dancing. They had a dance competition. So there's some of the boys. We have lots of videos of boys dancing, but they're really fluid.
Yeah.
What kind of music was
this? It's sort of
Indian pop. It's sort of like
our pop music, only it's in Telugu. But yeah, okay. So that's, I guess, the end of our structured portion. So we're gonna have some discussion here. I don't know if we could have some lights, maybe, not all the way, but.
We just want to play a slideshow of pictures just to look at if you're bored of what we're talking about.
There we go. Okay, so somebody who's... I can do the mic. Okay.
Hi. Back when you were showing the classes of the school children beginning their day and having their sort of assembly outdoors, you said, and then you said sort of your voice drops, and I wasn't sure I'd heard you correctly. You said, and then they said the pledge.
Yeah.
What pledge?
An Indian pledge. It's kind of, they have their national anthem that they sang at the end of the day, and then they had a pledge they said in the morning. We didn't really know what they were saying, so, but they would have their hand out and say a pledge.
It's just sort of like duty to my motherland and my country and my elders and all this stuff. It's pretty normal.
Oh, okay. I just wonder because, you know, we say the pledge as if there were only one in the whole wide world and we were the only people. Teaching, yeah.
Here, you want to hand that over?
Oh, sorry.
I had two quick questions. Number one, what did you teach? And number two, I noticed that the soccer players and some of the children standing in line were not wearing shoes. Was that because they could not afford them?
Okay, yeah. During sports time, they would always just be barefoot because they would always wear slippers, which is like our flip-flops. And so that's just inconvenient to wear when you're trying to run around and play sports and stuff.
Yeah, even like business people would wear flip-flops. Yeah. Because it's too hot to wear shoes.
And we were teaching English most of the time. We showed a picture of the supplementary reader, so that's just a story like the Trojan War or something like that, Huckleberry Finn. We'd read it or have the students read it, and then we'd ask questions about it or explain words that they didn't know, explain the story to them. And once in a while, we teach other subjects if we wanted to. Like, we'd say, well, what subject do you have right now? And they'd say, oh, science or something, so we teach about volcanoes, but whatever. But most of the time we'd be teaching English. One time I tried to teach math class to a ninth grade class and I realized I didn't know what it was, so I was like, let's teach English now.
I don't think we said this, but actually all of the classes are conducted in English at this school. It's an English medium school, so all of the classes are in English, except for Hindi and Telugu, but...
Yep, kindergarten, yeah.
I'm curious, that wonderful herd of goats on the road, if there are mixed populations of non-Hindus, those are the people who eat the meat, I expect. What do they use the goats for?
Some Hindus actually eat meat. It's just more of the strict practicing ones that don't. A lot of times the Brahmin, the high caste of Hindus, don't eat meat, but a lot of the middle class Hindus actually do.
I'd probably say that it's about half and half Hindus who are vegetarians.
So they'd always be asking non-veg or veg if you want, if you go to a restaurant, what kind do you want?
But you can't get beef.
No beef, yeah.
You mentioned... Do I have the mic?
Yep.
You mentioned how inexpensive the saris were. I assume you buy the length of material and then you take it to the embroiderer. The material may have cost $10, but that sari you have on is absolutely gorgeous, and I would like to know what it costs to do the embroidery on it.
Actually, you buy the cloth, it's already embroidered, but the blouse that I have on, you have to get fitted to you, and then there's a skirt underneath this too, but it's actually the piece of cloth with the embroidery was $10.
That's a lot due to the exchange rate, because a dollar here is like 49 rupees, which is quite a bit. Like we had this really nice meal at this restaurant where everybody was like in fancy clothes and it was air conditioned, like near, in Hyderabad near the end of our trip, for three of us, and like we each had like an entree and we had dessert and we ordered drinks. And at the end, it was like 500 rupees, which is like a little more than $10 for like everyone. So it's just sort of like it's the exchange rate.
I have a question for Madeline. I noticed on Facebook that you said that you got to really be friends with the nun, and that you saw her strict side, and you also saw her girly best friend side.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you can describe those two sides to us, and also, if you felt like you got to know these people, if enough of them knew English well enough that you could just have a casual conversation with them and get to know them as a friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the sisters there, I got to know a lot of them pretty well. And the brothers, too, we just talked to them over lunch or tea or something. But sometimes we did have communication issues, like we wouldn't really understand what we were talking about. And you'd try to explain, or they'd try to explain, and we just wouldn't get it. But a lot of times... in terms of the one sister that I was talking about, she was 20 years old, and she'd been a sister for only about 6 months. And she told me she decided that she wanted to be a sister when she was in ninth grade. So already she said, you know, I want to give my life to these kids and stuff. But in the Catholic tradition, you know, you would see her, like, being very strict with the kids. But then when it was just, like, me and her, she'd say, oh, I want to show you these pictures of my family and, like, talk about just different things about America. And she'd always want to go shopping with me. And, like, she gave me this necklace and stuff. So just being more like friends that way. But when we were with the kids, she'd have to be more strict and keeping track of what they were doing and making sure they, you know, did certain homework and whatever. So,
regarding the communication issue, among the younger kids, it was pretty hard for us to talk to them a lot of times. But once you got around to the 7th or 8th class, we could have decent just conversations, especially for the 9th and the 10th class. We could actually talk with them pretty well because they'd already been in this English school for like 9-10 years. So they knew English pretty well. Although their written English and like reading was probably a lot better than their spoken English, but even so they were pretty good. One of my favorite communication issue stories is that one of the brothers, Brother Peter, wanted to learn idioms. So we were trying to teach him idioms, and one of the first ones we taught him was rubbing it in. And because he was like, he was sort of making fun of the other brother because he had a bunch of classes that day and then Peter didn't. So he said he was rubbing it in, but then he sort of misunderstood later and he was trying to use it and he's like, I'm rubbing in his shoulders. And we're like, no, you're not. But so.
Hi. It was my understanding that India outlawed the caste system officially.
Theoretically.
What efforts are being made and who's making them to get rid of that caste?
Yeah.
So the thing that perpetuates the caste system is that culturally marriage in between castes is absolutely prohibited. So the castes can manage to stay separate even though they have no official legitimacy. They have cultural legitimacy. And so although even if the Dalits have some more rights now than they used to, the castes are still very separate, and usually a lot of times there are caste names, so a lot of times even by what somebody is named you can tell what caste they're from. And everybody just sort of knows this stuff, even though it's not really officially allowed. It hasn't disappeared at all. It's still really in force and influences a lot of aspects of life there for everyone.
But the government is making a lot of efforts to try to eradicate it, but it's difficult.
One last, I think.
I could maybe mention something about the caste thing. The government does have these programs, and some of the people that we knew, the Catholics, resented these programs, just like people resented affirmative action. And they said that people were pretending to be Dalits when they weren't to get these so-called benefits. So it's still there.
It's time for the offering.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robin and Carlene, for that gift of your talents and music. We now invite anyone who would like to share a special joy or concern in your life. If you would allow the microphone to be passed to you, this is a time for sharing those with the gathered group.
Marilyn and I are going to host my granddaughter this week. I'm looking forward to that, Audrey. She's 3, and she's been dragging me up and down the stairs. And then I wanted to mention that I had Lyme disease, and I had a bad case of it, and it made me sick for 12 days before it was diagnosed. And anyway, you know, I just wonder if it's my age that brought this, made it seem so bad or not, but really, for others, it's it could be pretty bad. So.
I just wanted to announce for those who didn't know that Prairie has a new member, and his name is Jake. My dog.
Your dog.
Well, we'd also like to announce that Prairie has a new member, and Now, for those of you who don't know, his name is Felix. He was born 4 weeks ago today, approximately 2 hours after Art put the tobacco in my hand, Kara went into labor.
Yes.
So, it went pretty quickly. She, you know, it was about 9 hours, beginning to end. So, and we're happy to be back here, and we're happy that he's being very good today, and he's wide awake, so I think he's getting all of this.
Yeah.
And thanks so much to everybody who's supported us, too, with the shower and everything and bringing food, and everybody who's had so many kind words for us. We really appreciate it.
It's good to see you. Good to see you both. All three of you. Felix. Yeah.
We had a very happy experience this past week. Our grandson in Baltimore was married, and they are Hasidic Jews, and the wedding experience, we have been to a couple of these weddings in the family before, but it was really something else. The amount of community spirit and the joy, and talking about segregation, the men are in one part and the women are in another part, dancing like crazy, but never dancing with one another. The men are incredible athletic dancers, and the women aren't too bad either. And this wedding was a little more liberal because at the tables at the dinner, men and women were seated at the same tables together, but that wasn't the tradition in other weddings. So it was a very good experience, and lots of rituals, like the bride and groom couldn't see each other until he comes into the room where she is sitting and lifts up her veil to be sure it's the right woman before he marries her.
Hi, I'm Terry Prudlow, and I was delighted upon returning to Madison after 28 years to get a poem in the Madison magazine this month. I am not delighted by the fact that they didn't change the byline from last month, so my poem is listed with someone else's name.
I have a joy to be back here. We haven't been in months and months and months, and it just feels really, really good to be here.
Good to see you.
I have a joy of finally getting unpacked. I had to move my children, my husband, and all of his bikes and tons of clothes and, you know, the stuff that you gather over the years from one side of Dane County, from Belleville to the other side in Black Earth. So we're pretty happy to be unpacked and settled in our new house and have a huge backyard. It's great, except this humid weather could it's just not the best, but yay.
Good.
I had an adventurous week. On Wednesday morning, I was stung badly by a swarm of hornets from the ground, probably yellow jackets, over in Pike Park. On Wednesday, I went down to Whitewater to, and I visited my old, where I used to teach, and learned that the fellow who was replaced, who replaced me on the faculty, had died 2 weeks ago. I asked, and nobody had told me. I'm very sad about this because I didn't have a chance to. He died of cancer, esophageal cancer that had metastasized, and I didn't have a chance to go and visit him before he died. They told me, well, he's an atheist, so they're not going to have a memorial service. And I said, that doesn't matter. The Unitarians have services, so I'm going to see if I can engineer a memorial service for him. And then yesterday I had a wonderful time with the annual meeting of the Botanical Club of Wisconsin. I was a founding member in the early 1970s. I have not been active, and I'm becoming active again with this marvelous group of eager field botanists.
Great.
We had a nice picnic party, well, a party send-off for Dirk and Susan Herr-Hoyman in Wingera Park yesterday. Really had a good time. And I happened that you can share our good time. I brought back what leftover brownies, and please eat them. One plate, they have walnuts, and the other plate is nut-free.
I just wanted to share, and I'll try to, you'll have to kind of catch my drift here because I don't want to embarrass a certain daughter of mine, but I might have a daughter who might have turned 5. And it's a joy. And we are also hosting my sister-in-law from St. Louis this week, who's going to be going into her sophomore year at Bradley. So welcome, Lucy.
We'll just kind of flow now into allowing or inviting anyone who is visiting today who would like to stand and share with us your name and perhaps a little bit about you. And Dorothy has the microphone. We welcome all those who are here who may not feel that need.
Bill and Norma Cape. We're here visiting Bob Cape and Amy and our grandchildren and having a very good time. Went sailing in Lake Mendota yesterday and having a very nice visit. And we've been here to Prairie before. We like Prairie very much.
Good. Welcome.
Hi, my name's Laura Darling, and I'm a member of First Unitarian Society. But I was very interested in seeing the presentation on India. Years ago, I was an exchange student, and my number one pick was India. And I didn't get to go to India. I went to South America and then spent 10 years living all over the world and never got to India. So I vicariously got to experience going to India today. So that was very nice.
Nice to see you this morning, Laura. Good to see you.
I'm Ron Pyle. This is my wife, Sharon Beckman. We're from Stoughton, and we just decided to come visit.
Oh, good. Good to see you this morning. Nice to see you.
I'd like to introduce my daughter-in-law, Marie, Colin's wife. And if you stick around later, Juniper is downstairs. Juniper is going to be with me for 6 days, so we might have to get together, Marilyn.
Okay. Our announcements will be coming after the hymn and after extinguishing our chalice. But right now I'd like to invite all of us to stand and sing number Hymn number 123, Spirit of Life. Please stand as you're willing and able.
We extinguish the chalice here that it may glow gently in our hearts. May it light your path as you leave this place, and may it guide your way until we are together again. So I guess now we'll have the some extra short announcements that are not in the order of service, and I'd like to start off that we showed some of this mango jelly that they were making before, and we have some on the back table, so as you're going out, take a piece. It's really tasty.
And also on the back table, there's all the jewelry and bangles and stickers and stuff. Those are all things that were gifted to me by various people. Just when I go somewhere, I say, oh, take this ring or whatever. So if you want to take a look at that too.
Are you done? Mm-hmm. The hospitality and membership committee met on Wednesday night or Thursday night, so this didn't get in the prairie fire, but they're planning an orientation on Saturday, August 29th for new members or people that would like to meet new members here at Prairie in the morning. So you'll hear more about that from Paula. She'd made the commitment to some people that something would happen this summer, so that's going to happen on August 29th. And then in the fall, we're going to have an evening series, a more sort of informal orientation, and that'll happen later in September, if you can't make the August 29th.
Just a quick reminder, we're going to have a UU blood drive in September. I think it's the 3rd, but don't hold me to it. But we hope we get some donors from Prairie, as well as I think it's going to be at James Reeb. But more information later on.
If there's anybody here from the program committee, would you let me know? I want to talk to someone from that's on the program committee.
Some people asked me about the table that used to have magazines to exchange, to give. And there is one right near the men's bathroom. So if ladies can go there and look over the magazines, too.
We have a guest.
Okay, I'd like to close with these words. After the words, a quiet. After the songs, a silence. After the crowd, only the memory recalls the gathering. Peace and justice have need of you after the words, the music, and the gathering. God grant you the depth for dedication to justice. God grant you the will to be an apostle of peace. And please join us for coffee and conversation.